It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the entire planet, we are Red Eye Radio. Hey, if you find that you can't listen overnight live on all of our hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of great radio stations, you can always download our Red Eye Radio app and listen to the show, which is our podcast, and our podcast, which is our show, whenever you choose. Eric, we talked about that this, in all likelihood, that somebody was going to bring this up, and probably we thought it would be the leftist open border activist, and it happened. Hmm. MSNBC. Here's the headline. Are you ready for this?
All right.
New York Mayor Eric Adams is blowing his chance to be truly welcoming to migrants.
Yeah.
Democrats' muddled message and lack of action isn't winning them any fans. It was clear to anyone who understands how migrants continue to get dehumanized that Adams' July news conference calling for federal help is yet another example of a Democratic politician who says the right things but lacks the political will to take the matters into his own hands. And he talks about the, you know, his first part. We are all in this together to deal with this influx of innocent people who are seeking asylum or fleeing wars, who are fleeing crises in their own country. New York is one of those few states where you have a right to shelter. And then he writes here from on MSNBC, and this is Julio Varela, MSNBC opinion columnist, he writes, those words should be commended. So too should Adam's statement that people want to come to New York State because this is the most diverse city in our country. However, that humane narrative at times turns into blaming migrants. Quote, you know, Pampers cost money, Adams said at the same news conference. We're going to need food. Right now, we're using our emergency funds. But we've also got to deal with some medical issues. There are some real medical issues that we need. And then education. These people are going to have to find housing and education. We got to place them in schools, translation services. And so we are working out with the numbers, and we're going to sit down with FEMA and the state to help get the money that we need to stabilize what we're doing. And his analysis of that statement by Eric Adams. In other words, migrants are a burden. Whether it's a Republican standing at the Mexican border or a Democrat speaking on the street of New York, the message is similar.
Yeah, you got to be.
Look. Well, we had said this before. Mm-hmm. If you're a sanctuary city and you say we're not going to pay attention to what the federal government, their law is, we're not going to pay attention to the federal government when it comes to illegal immigrants. We are not going to do that. Well, if you have publicly stated that, then you should pay for it and not complain.
Before you implement such policy, tell me that you're already prepared to pay for it.
Yes.
That you understand the costs that come with it as a city or county or state. Instead, what do you have? You have Mayor Adams calling Joe for help. We need help.
Well, again, illegal immigration, and we've talked about this before, and Biden not following the Democrats love the virtue signaling of it. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as Obamacare. Mm-hmm.
Mayor Adams. Well, I like sanctuary city policy. I didn't know I was going to have to pay for it.
Same thing as Obamacare. We like it. Oh, so you're saying that people that need medical care that's a right are a burden. You're dehumanizing them.
How dare you?
No, you're talking about the reality. People cost money.
Well, here's the thing. Imagine that Adams would have taken from day one, would have disarmed the whole thing, attempted to disarm the thing from Abbott. Now, remember, the first time he was talking about it, he was talking about the people coming in on planes, and that was not Governor Abbott of Texas.
No, no.
But let's say after the buses started showing up, he just went out and said, you know what? We're going to do everything in our power to welcome these individuals and make sure that they are safe. And just leave it at that. What would he have heard from his constituents if he had done that, though? That's the question. What would the people of New York City have said if he had said that? No, we welcome them, and we're going to do our best to keep them safe and make them feel accommodated.
Right. And we will take everything from excess city funds, because we're a sanctuary city, and this city wishes to be a sanctuary city, and all of your tax dollars, we may have to have an increase in property taxes,
right,
to take
care. And sales tax other tax.
Right, and sales tax, but this is who we are.
Right.
It's the same thing as we saw with Obamacare or any type of health care plan when it comes to passing it on their own, when it comes to the actually money that needs to be spent. All of a sudden, it's like, well, wait a minute. No, we want somebody else to pay for it.
Right.
Well, we didn't think we were going to have to pay for it.
Right.
Let that person pay for it. Let the rich should pay for it. A corporation should pay for it.
And remember when the Democrats were attempting to pass single payer in their states and they couldn't get it done because in California, they didn't even put a payment mechanism, a revenue and income mechanism or payment mechanism in the bill, and they had to stop it. And why is that? Because they can't afford it, and they knew that. Try and go out and say, look, we're going to put a massive fuel tax in place in our state, and that's going to pay for the healthcare system. You're not going to win that, and they know it. And the same here. Mayor Adams didn't feel like he could openly and say, no, we welcome people from other countries, and if Greg Abbott thinks he's doing us damage, no, we welcome them. And even if we have to raise taxes or do whatever to accommodate them, then we will do that. He knows he can't say that. What does he do? He screams for help from the Biden administration. As a sanctuary city, we don't want to cooperate with the feds, but they sure need to pay for it.
Meanwhile, and this goes back, well, Elon Musk has said this a couple of times, that remote work is no longer acceptable, that people are going to have to come into work. Fortune magazine did over 2 weeks old, this article, but it's still worth bringing up. We just got so many different things going on. The world's richest man doubled down when he confirmed the memo's authenticity on Twitter, when he put that out, that remote work is no longer acceptable. Writing that remote workers should pretend to work somewhere else. As it turns out, remote workers really are pretending to work quite a lot, but pretending to work is hard work. New data from Quetelag and GitLab put a number on it. Knowledge workers waste an extra 67 minutes online each day doing menial tasks for the express purpose of proving to their managers and colleagues that they are available and working. It's taking a strain. A survey poll of 2,000 knowledge workers found that more than half, 54%, reported feeling pressure to show their online status by replying to emails and messages, adding comments to Google documents, or updating project management tools. It's a new twist in the developing saga of remote work, and it shows that escaping the culture of presenteeism isn't as simple as escaping the physical office. Wow. Presenteeism, which means you're present, right?
Right.
You're there.
Yeah, yeah. Or trying to prove that you're there.
Right.
Yeah.
The report calls this digital presenteeism. It's a remote version of traditional presenteeism when workers stay at their desk for no reason other than to prove their bosses that they're working. Yeah, we've seen Office Space. It hinges on the same visibility, digital presenteeism, whether that means responding to notifications or sitting in Zoom meetings you don't need to attend, the report says. Mm. And like office presentations, it doesn't correlate to any better work output. The worries about maintaining active Slack status aren't unfounded. Many CEOs besides Musk have been vocal about their belief in the superiority of in-person work. Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon calls remote work an aberration, while remote work is seen as no match for the office when it comes to learning, growth, and creating upward mobility, according to Chris Merrill, CEO of capital market company Harrison Street. It's very important to get the younger employees in the office collaborating and working hard. Wow. It's really interesting because you and I have always, we've talked about there is going to be a debate on this. And we said, look, after when COVID first started and people were at home, everybody was in that emergency mode. Yeah, so, yeah. Right. And you could see that, you know, they were, even managers were talking about the fact that the productivity seemed to be great. And even if there was a little bit of movement downwards towards like, didn't they say one time there was like a 1% productivity loss of, I remember seeing this as like probably the fall of 2020. It was like a 1% productivity loss, but the cost of having them home increased productivity up to 7%. So even though the actual work, you know, what it cost mm-hmm. to have them at the office and everything else, that even though there was a slight, overall it was good. Has that changed in many companies? Apparently, yes.
Well, I would say, I would question, I would wonder, all right, because if you were to say that, okay, it costs this much per square foot per employee, right, to mm-hmm. office them.
Right.
But that assumes that you're going to give up that space that you have now, right? And if you assume that back in 2020, that, okay, if we were to do this long term and give up this much whether it's retail space or office space, whatever, if we're to give up that square footage long term, then this saves us. How many companies realized you can't do that? That, well, we're not going to actually be able to do that long term. We're not going to bring down the amount of office space that we have. And it's still going to be required that we have this much. And so the trade-off on productivity is not going to be realized.
They say 7 in 10 people who work during the hours that work best for them, and some companies do that, which are not necessarily when their colleagues are online, feel this pressure most acutely, reporting high levels of worry mm-hmm. that people won't recognize that they are working. It's also not a concern limited to people with bosses. 68% of C-level executives reported feeling the same tug. This should be their signal to impart change. 63% of workers believe their company leaders prefer a traditional culture with employees in the office. This may be why they're stressed to present themselves as fully online when they're not in person. They may think that's the next best thing, showing that you're always online.
Right, yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, but you're doing menial tasks, which aren't actually making you more productive. They say that the, let me get the last sentence here and flip over to the sheet. The additional 67 minutes workers report spending online every day just to avoid suspicion that they are not working enough adds up quickly to more than 5.5 hours per week.
Yeah, right.
Worse, those hours do nothing for the employee nor the company. During that time, only 25% of people said that they are highly productive.
I guess the question would be, are they highly productive when they're in the office? The same people. Yeah, I do wonder about the productivity of a workforce in general. But you have to break it down into different industries and sectors, and then it's like, okay, In certain areas, you can't get away with it, right? In manufacturing, you know, it's you're going to take your break, then you're going to go back to the line.
In radio talk shows.
In radio talk shows. Don't change the topic. So the entire thing is you know, I wonder, let's take COVID and that work from home through COVID out of the equation. Let's just talk about work from home in general. Because there was this years ago, this idea was floated. Well, many people will be telecommuting and blah, 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 blah. I have a family member who has a pretty big job. And he, from day one, has been working from home. He's always officed from home. And it wasn't a special setup. It was people in that particular position and similar positions in his company. And it works for a massive brand. Have always done that. And so they found the productivity was going to be, you know, and you can't, you've got so many things that you've got to do and things that you have to respond to. There's no way you can fake it. But there are things in the office and at home in certain jobs where you can pretend you're working, make it look like you're working. And so where is that, you know, or is it better to just have them in the office, you know, and assure that at least they're showing up? I think the at-home work, I think that's going to be a phase. I think that is going to be in the next several years. I think that's going to be worked out.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Coming up next, we'll tell you what that problem is.
All right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Keep your engine humming in the heat this summer by keeping up with preventive maintenance. Think your PM is complete after your oil is changed? Think again. There's grease, transmission fluids, and gear oil to consider, too. Grease, for example, is made of oil, thickener, and additives. It provides rust protection by preventing water spray-off and wash-off on equipment like the universal joint, fifth wheel, and clutch throwout bearings. It also helps protect major greasing points like tie rod ends, spring pin bushings, kingpin, and the chassis. Today's synthetic oils means more miles between engine oil changes, but greasing intervals aren't growing at the same pace. Your fifth wheel, for example, needs to be greased every 15,000 miles or monthly. Stop into a TA truck service near you to start or strengthen your preventive maintenance program today.
This report brought to you by Lubrifiner, engineering filters that are built to do more for heavy-duty fleets since 1996.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, the one problem with the CEOs now coming out, whether it's Elon Musk and others, and people in industry saying, most people are going to have to go back to work. We found out that long-term you have better productivity, collaborative environment, monitoring of management on what you're actually doing each and every day. The problem is that the Democrats and the liberals have already jumped on the fact that working at home now is a right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't allow working at home, you're a racist. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the new thing coming from the left, that it's basically white supremacy and white privilege that created the concept of going to work.
And try and reverse that. And, of course, you're a bigot.
Get a word in edgewise. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara. on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I forgot where it was. Was it in Los Angeles? Was it in the government? Was it Seattle? But this goes back. I remember we did the story where I don't know if it was the union or a group representing the workers saying that going back to the office is based in white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, where are they? And I just put that in, working in the office is racist. I put it into Google, and just tons of articles. Why most black office workers are dreading to return to office. Tips for dealing with racism when you return to the office. Why many women of color don't want to return to the office. And it's just people of color dread returning to the office. Racism. Those are just articles from 2021. And then we got into 2022. And when people started being brought back, you had unions and other groups that we have brought you in the past. I just can't find the article at this moment that have said, no, it's racist. You have a right to work at home. And then let's talk climate change. You know, you have a Democratic Party that will raise taxes that will make inflation worse, pass a bill to raise taxes across the board in a recession. They will raise taxes. They will spend money. They will raise taxes during a recession. They will increase inflation during a recession to promote spending on climate change. And you've also seen that coming from the left. No, people need to work at home because of climate change. We don't need people on the roads. We don't need people even taking public transportation, because still you have to build the infrastructure, which what? Destroys the climate. I saw Bill Maher on Friday. He's on with some young Democrat saying, well, you know, hey, why aren't young people supporting Biden? He gave you the climate change bill. You got the most money spent on climate change ever. Young people, that's what you care about, whatever. And he said, you know, even though the earth was supposed to be gone or whatever he said, like in 2005, saying exactly what we said, they've never reached their targets. All the doomsday events never happened. And he was sort of making the point that we made many times, which was, how many times do you have to be wrong on your doomsday scenarios of climate change before somebody is allowed to question what you're doing now? Tell me how I should have any confidence that what you're doing should work when every prediction you've given me before has been false.
And on top of that, the new calling that net zero is not zero, and so it doesn't matter how much the government throws money at it, they can't change anything until they flat out outlaw everything. Think about it.
Yes. Greta was on that. Remember? Greta was on that.
So,
well, it's all BS because you people don't really want to get rid of, and by you people, I mean climate change activists.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't want to change climate change. You just want to pretend, or you don't want to solve the problem. You simply want to pretend that you're doing it by saying, well, okay, we can have a net zero. We can pollute here, but we'll plant some trees over there.
Right.
Or we can pollute here and we'll just buy credits so we can pollute more. That you're actually not solving the problem. You're just paying money to continue the problem.
Well, and the best they can do is that the benefits to you are going to be only if you spend tens of thousands of dollars, which is not a benefit.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, that's what it's come to. And even with the EV thing, 70% of EV makers are not going to qualify. Their vehicles aren't going to qualify.
Well, we know with the Keystone Pipeline, when the president came out, I'm doing it because of climate change. And you go code somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Go learn to code.
Yeah, go learn to code. We're going to kill tens of thousands of union jobs. Go learn to code. We're going to do it because we're doing what's best for climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's ask his energy secretary. Let's ask his climate czar. Let's ask his transportation secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Is this true what the president said? Is that the best way? Because research shows that the best way to fight climate change is to actually keep the pipeline.
Right.
Well, yeah, that would be the right way. The president's actually wrong on that.
Yeah.
So you're saying he killed tens of thousands of jobs not to solve the problem of climate change, but to make it worse, but give the imagery that he was doing something.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think you, with those that are, you know, I mean, to answer Bill Maher's question, this entire thing falls short with them. You're never going to be able to satisfy the activist left by any government action anymore. You know, the far left and, well, the Democratic Party does not want Biden to run in 24. Then who do they want? They believe somebody else can sell. They believe that the message, they incorrectly believe the message is the problem. You know, it's and he can't get the message across. No, it's the agenda. And how many on climate change believe that a Gavin Newsom could actually work to that end? You know, you're never going to satisfy the far left because they change all the time. The ones in the administration that are screaming, go buy an EV, to the extent that they put those tax credits in, first of all, hit the mark on the tax credits or miss the mark on the tax credits, they're not going to apply to 70% of those EVs out there. Well, then on top of that, well, sorry, it doesn't matter because just making the batteries, just mining the lithium for the batteries, you're already disturbing everything that we are for right now. Mm-hmm. Lithium is dirty. You can't mine for lithium. Net zero is not zero. You're not going to ever satisfy that part, the activist environmentalist group out there, it's ever changing.
Right, but still they will push because we've seen that already. The push, remote work is better for the climate, so we should push and expect that to be pushed harder. I found an article here. This goes. This is from February. Black employees will thrive with remote work. It's anti-racist. Talking about how working in the office is racist. So now it's racist and it hurts the climate. And so that is the push for remote work, as you know that many businesses will be saying, okay, that was a temporary thing and it worked well for a while, but long term, it's no way that we wish to have our workforce in here. They're going to be accused of, look, if everything is racist, they can certainly make a case to their base that, you know, who wants to work remotely, I'd rather work from home. I don't want to get up. I don't want to take a vehicle in. I just want to sit at home in my pajamas, drink coffee, and I can check in from work there. Because now it's becoming a right. Working from home is a right. And the fact working, this is another thing that's been brought up, working in the office is discriminatory for people with lower incomes because they can't afford the transportation to get to work. Therefore, it's lower incomes, and you have a significant number of minorities at lower incomes. Working in the office is racist also.
And you're also paying for child care if you're working from the office.
Right.
If you're working from home, you don't have to pay. So when your kids get home from school, you're there. You don't have to pay for extra child care.
So it's anti-family.
Mm-hmm.
And don't think that the left, this isn't their next. They're always looking for a new battle. This is their next, I believe this is one of their next battles.
Yeah, it could be.
Just from what we see early on. So these companies, because they allowed workers to, and it was a necessity at that point because they had no choice. Basically, mm-hmm. the governments closed them down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, we can't do this because here's what the advisory is. So everybody worked from home and it worked fine for a while. Then all of a sudden it not working as well. For some companies, some industries, maybe it is. But a lot of industries now saying, nah, you got to come back. And it's being led really by Elon Musk.
Well, and that, again, that productivity is going to be measured, and any company who allows their productivity to drop is not going to serve, if they're a publicly traded company, not going to serve the shareholder. And so you've got to make changes. There's no way around that. And so the left can bring on as many battles as they want, and, you know, nobody cares about productivity. The far left doesn't care about productivity. They don't care about profits. All they care about is getting the agenda implemented at every level. So let's see where it goes. It'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it will be. And he did bring it. I mean, again, Elon Musk, because he won't let go of it, has given it a much higher profile.
Yeah. No, I think a couple of other companies that have said,
yep,
sorry, we're going to draw the line. People have to get back to the office or else. And let's wait and see if there are lawsuits. Because that's how the fired employee, anybody who's terminated, is going to have to go to court on it.
I'm objecting that I have to get out of bed to work.
Gary McNamara.
I want to lay in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And just have the microphone in bed so I don't... I'll Brian Wilson the show.
If that ever happens, don't tell anybody. That's the theater of the mind that you don't want to happen.
Red Eye Radio changes its name.
Bed Eye Radio.
Bed Eye. Bed.
Yeah.
Broadcasting from bed radio.
Yes.
Why should I have to get up? I'm old.
Excellence in bed broadcasting. EIBB.
I mean, it's not just going to work. It's having to get out of. I'm old.
Yeah.
It's tough to get. It hurts to get out of bed.
That's right.
I should be able to work from my bed, never get up.
It's discriminatory. It's literally causing me pain.
It's ageist.
Yes. How dare you?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harney, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So, as we know, the CDC COVID recommendations have been loosened almost completely.
Mm-hmm.
And taking a look at it, this is COVID cases USA, 7-day average for August 13th of this year, 103,000. Last year at this time, 128,000.
Yeah.
Deaths, 7-day average. A year ago, 655, 7-day average, 485 now. Now, the difference is the death would be the most, if you're looking for what would be possibly the most accurate, it would be deaths. But the COVID cases are completely skewed because way more people are actually doing the home tests.
Yeah, right.
They're not going. They're not, so it doesn't officially take count. So we probably have more COVID cases now than we did a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference? Why isn't everything still as locked down?
Political pressure.
People won't accept it anymore.
And at some point, right, you do have to move on. And officially for the right. CDC, they had to do that.
Yep.
And that's exactly how this was always going to play out. Well, when it's politically not an advantage, then we'll move on. And they pushed it until the very end. I mean, they pushed it until, you know, at some point they had to make a move.
The public just wasn't responding
to right.
it. They didn't. It's.
And so what do? Then you come out and I don't know. Did they think that by doing this, they were also going to get political points? you know, it, positive political points from moving on and relaxing the guidelines? Did they think, oh, look, we can, you know, be the hero by officially saying it? I mean, I don't know. I would love to hear those conversations on the inside.
I don't think the public is even paying attention to that at all.
Well, I think there had to be, there should have been an explainer with all the stories. Explain to people what COVID is. Honestly.
They moved on.
I'm sorry, what's COVID again?
Well, exhibition football did start over the weekend.
Yeah, right. You know, so it really is moving on, but it's moving on from something that the public moved on from a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Again, it's about, and what was it? It really is, in the relaxing of the guidelines, if you read through it, it's about, you know, assessing your own risk, which is exactly where it should have been all along.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America. And around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. If you can't listen to our show live, then download our Red Eye Radio app, and you can listen to our show, which is our podcast, and our podcast, which is our show, when you choose to. You know, just looking at the broad picture of what's happened since the raid a week ago on Mar-a-Lago is the Attorney General, what he had to say last Wednesday, and then the release of the warrant, but not the affidavit. Hmm. What we're being told is that we need to just have trust in the Justice Department and the FBI that they did the right thing. That's what one side is selling you. All right?
Uh-huh.
And you say, okay, maybe in regular times that would be a reasonable request, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't demonize the top echelon of the FBI and the Department of Justice because you don't have all the information yet.
Right.
Right? That's what we're being told.
Yeah.
And probably in a lot of times in our history, most Americans would accept that.
All right. Sure.
The reason they are not accepting it is because they have been through Republicans, Trump supporters, independence, anybody who believes in the rule of law and due process has seen that the opposition to Trump and the Republicans are not practicing that and have not practiced that over the last 6 years. We have seen that mm-hmm. time and time again. The biggest violation would have been the first 3 years of Trump being in office and Russia collusion that were completely false. Lies were told in the FBI. Information was illegally leaked, as we know. And by the way, that was a great point was brought up. Everything that was leaked from the Justice Department last week, a law was broken.
Yeah, right.
But we
and have, possibly right. would violate. I mean, if they're right. looking at charging the former president, would violate his rights again if some of that information ends up. Being used as part of the basis for prosecution if they're going to move on something.
So we know what we went through. We know that for 3 years we were told that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack or change the outcome of the election. Mm-hmm. We know now that the only party who did that, and the facts are out there, was the Hillary campaign.
Yeah.
So we know that in two different enterprises, we know at least twice the Hillary campaign financed and promoted a lie all the way up to the FBI and all the way up to the FISA court. In one case, to get a secret warrant on the Trump campaign that was based on a lie. The entire thing was a lie financed by the Hillary campaign and the DNC. We know that now. And we know when it went up to the FBI before, that was the Michael Sussman case, where the Hillary campaign financed and created a lie, sold it to the FBI to investigate. The FBI started investigating it. It was a lie. It wasn't true. And then when the FBI started investigating it, they went to the media. The media reported it. And then the campaign said, see, they're investigating Trump. They're investigating Trump on a lie created by the same people that were throwing out the accusation. They created and financed that lie.
Yep. Yep.
And so Trump supporters, Republicans and independents and some Democrats that no longer agree with where the Democratic Party has gone, went through that for 3 years. 3 years of all allegations and no evidence. 3 years of an allegation with not one iota of what the actual crime was that got us to a special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, that we said should have never happened because they never identified what the crime was. In this particular case, we are being told is that this is all part of the President's Record Act, and the rest is sort of, since he had some classified materials that nobody can tell you whether they're truly classified or not, made it so we could create a warrant that not just looked for those specific classified documents that we leaked to the press, but the warrant could be everything that Trump ever did in his 4 years of as president. Every single item, anything that was done or written during the 4 years of Trump could be confiscated by the FBI. Hmm. Everything. Privilege documents, attorney-client privilege. Well, if you're going to do that and you're going to do the unprecedented act for the first time in American history, raiding a ex-president's home and making a claim of serious wrongdoing, you better damn well explain why you're doing it. Because a significant portion of the country doesn't believe it. Why? Because you've lied to them before. And so when Merrick Garland last Wednesday got up there and was trying to make it sound like the mainstream Republicans are going after just the rank-and-file FBI agents who are doing their job, no, they're going after the rotten stink in the management of the FBI that we have seen in action, and yes, some Department of Justice lawyers. And you, Merrick Garland.
Well, if you're talking about, and he was, claiming that people were going after the rank and file FBI agents and their integrity, it is upon leadership to get out and defend that integrity when something so huge happens, to get ahead of it. His statement and a question and answer session, a real press conference, should have happened Monday night, the day of the raid.
And the warrant should have been made public on that day.
Yes. That day.
You should have been.
Here it is. If you've got nothing to be afraid of, and you had nothing to be afraid of, and you believe all of this was justified, then it is your duty. You are obligated to the American people, and you are obligated to get out and work to protect the integrity of the FBI in that case.
Because the questions that would be asked would be, Trump claims that he gave blanket declassification, both written and orally, to him on any documents that were shipped to Mar-a-Lago while he was president of the United States.
Right.
He had the power to do that.
Right.
So, the other story, that the National Archives actually packed up some of the stuff and sent it to him.
Right.
Still trying to figure out, you know, whether that has been verified or not.
Kash Patel, who worked as one of the press secretaries in the Trump administration, not for President Trump, but Christopher Miller at the time, and he made the claim, Kash Patel did, on Fox News.
Right.
Saying that they mistakenly, that they admitted to mistakenly packing up the documents and moving them to Mar-a-Lago. And if that is the case, then we should have no concern. The question, I guess, would be, then, which documents are you talking about? If we're talking about the top secret SEI documents here that are so top secret that only a few people are actually cleared to see them, or which documents would you be talking about? And where is the documentation on that? If you're going to make that claim, I believe, in the media, then you should be able to back up that claim, and there should be something to that. And on top of that, the former president claims that, no, I declassified anything that was being taken to Mar-a-Lago. And if that's the case, then there's going to be some paperwork. There's going to be something, some record of him doing that.
The other thing is, when you have the obstruction of justice probable cause, but you don't say what obstruction of justice of what crime. When you say that he broke the Espionage Act, but you don't say which part of the Espionage Act that he broke. The fact that the warrant was so wide-ranging and not just for, as one would assume, if it was true, that was if it was to get highly nuclear weaponry, highly top-secret documents, that if that's what they were after, then how did the judge expand the warrant to anything ever being produced during the whole Trump campaign? There seems to be some extremely serious Fourth Amendment problems here with this that stick right out at you. And one must remember also, when it comes to top secret and classified information, we're not talking about Eric. We're not talking about me in possession. We're talking about an ex-president and what went through his office, where the president of the United States can determine like that what, rightly or wrongly, that's the law, what's classified and what is declassified at that particular moment. He has the ability. There are so many open questions here, and a week into it with all these questions, and the attorney general knowing that his office on Trump has blown any credibility when dealing with Trump because of the lies, the laws broken, the changing of a warrant application, as we know from the FBI during the Trump-Russia collusion, the leaking, the illegal leaking by top members of the FBI, and the out and outright lying about what happened, the Mueller investigation that was a political hack job that never actually tried to find out, okay, did Trump collude with the Russians?
Right.
Where is the best evidence? Well, the best evidence would be in that warrant that they got. It has to be. That's got to be the best evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians. I got a secret warrant. They never went down that path. Why? Because I believe some of them knew that Hillary was behind it all, and she was, as we found out. It was all a lie created by her. When you have that kind of thing happening, when you see that it's happened once, where a sitting president administration, because it all, remember, it started when Obama was president, when a sitting president administration goes after the opposition party's candidate and lies and creates lies and finance lies and sells them to federal law enforcement and the Department of Justice. They've done it once, and now you're indignant because the charge is you may be doing it again. instead of saying, look, we can't let what happened happen again. We need to be absolutely clear why we're doing this. You're playing the exact same game that the Obama administration and then the incoming, the FBI director who remained the same during the Trump administration, James Comey, you're doing the exact same rot and legal filth as they were involved in.
And now they're in a position where they're going to have to, they're scrambling. Thursday by the AG was scrambling.
Is that Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday.
Okay.
And I don't see why in the world they believe that they're going to win this. Because what's going to be next? Are you going to move? Are you going to indict? And if you indict, here's the thing. If you don't indict on January 6th, right, and it's something on the Presidential Records Act, then you're really going to prosecute based on the Presidential Records Act?
Which is, by the way, a civil violation.
And if it's not, and you find something on January 6th, then it's going to be clear this is a fishing expedition. You don't win either way. And then if you don't move on anything, then you did it for nothing? There isn't a move here. The Department of Justice does not have a winning move here.
You see the story that I think Business Insider was on it. It's the lead on the Drudge Report. Trump with the plea bargain, basically saying that last week he wrote to Merrick Garland saying, this thing, a lot of people believe it's unfair. Anything I can do to soften this blow? And a lot of people are saying, that's a threat from Trump that you better come to me or there's going to be riots. What it seems to me is that seems to be a legal move from his lawyers to say, we cooperated before, we've always cooperated, and even after the raid, Trump was willing to cooperate with you
right
on this. I think that's more likely what it is.
Well, I mean, yeah.
I don't believe it's a plea bargain.
Yeah, no. And it likely is. And you think about this, too, all the liberals up until the day he said it were, why is Trump so afraid of them releasing the information on the warrant? No, he came out and said, nope, we encourage all of it to come out.
And Republicans are now calling for the affidavit to come out saying it's not complete.
Right.
And they said, Republicans have had to say, we'll get to the bottom of it and get the affidavit released when we take power.
Uh-huh.
So no sides, well, the only side hiding anything that seems to be hiding it is the Democrats. Republicans want it all out.
Right.
Trump doesn't have the affidavit.
Nope.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Most traders dealing in corn, soybeans, and wheat are probably not too surprised at Friday's USDA crop production report, the first forecast based partially on farmer surveys about expected yields. However, cotton traders may be stunned at what USDA said about cotton production. More on that in a minute. First, for corn, USDA forecasting a 14.4 billion bushel crop, 5% smaller than last year, based partially on a 4% decline in expected harvested acreage. Soybeans, no real surprise there. USDA looking for a record 4.53 billion bushel crop, up 2% from last season. This from record expected yields and 1% more harvested acres. Now to cotton. Most traders were looking for a cotton crop of maybe 15 million bales. USDA's forecast far below anybody's guess at only 12.6 million, down 28% from last season. USDA forecasting a huge amount of abandonment, leaving projected harvested area down by 31%. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Interesting, Jonathan Turley said that, wrote a great point saying that in a case like this that's so highly, you know, publicized and so because of everything that has gone on with the past investigations of Trump that have been completely bogus, that a special master, an independent legal person should have been appointed to say, okay, here's what's good in the warrant and here's what's not.
Right.
Some type of federal judge or whatever is a independent master to look at this because this is such an unprecedented situation, yet the DOJ is opposed to doing that. And he's asking the question, why? Well, here they can look at it and say, okay, this is good. This isn't good. This has to go back to Trump.
Right.
And so what you don't get there, as you write here, the DOJ is apparently opposing the appointment of a special master, a judicial official who would conduct an independent review and decide which materials could be handed over to the government and which materials would have to be returned to Trump and his attorneys. But they refuse to do that. They don't wish to do it.
Well, this clearly isn't over because this is definitely going to go to the courts. There's no doubt his attorneys are going to continue to challenge this.
Hours a week on your favorite radio station, online or in our app, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye. So, yeah, Trump claimed that privileged material, which is attorney-client material, was taken by the FBI agents, and he wants them back. And reading here from Breitbart, the attorney-client privilege protected under the right to counsel, guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution, means that almost any communications from a client to his or her attorney cannot be revealed. Hmm. Similar questions about attorney-client privilege surrounded the FBI's seizure of materials in 2018 from the apartment and office of former Trump attorney Michael Cohen. Just so you know, this is very important to understand this with Michael Cohen, a special master was appointed and ruled that two-thirds of the materials concerning communications between Cohen and Trump were covered by attorney-client privilege and could not be used by the Department of Justice. Last year, a federal judge ordered the appointment of a special master, and that could still happen in this case.
Yeah.
Right. Last year, a federal judge ordered the appointment of a special master after the Department of Justice seized journalist James O'Keefe's phone. New York Times, which faced a defamation suit from O'Keefe, had begun publishing legal memos between O'Keefe and his attorneys shortly after the phone had been seized in a raid related to Ashley Biden's diary, prompting suspicions of leaks. Legal scholar Jonathan Turley wrote that the request for the appointment of a special master after the Mar-a-Lago raid seemed reasonable, given the search warrants' broad scope. The request for a special master would seem reasonable, particularly given the sweeping language used in the warrant. It's hard to see what material could not be gathered under this warrant. Under this warrant, it was like anything in the office could be taken. Well, what is the probable cause for that?
Right.
What is the obstruction of justice? What precisely in the Espionage Act relates to anything that they believe that Trump might have done wrong that would warrant such a broad search of everything that existed from his 4 years in office? Eric, unless you have, and I know some of the liberals are talking about the fact that this is all Trump selling CIA sources mm-hmm. to the Saudis for $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that one, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
That's being brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's something like that conspiracy theory, what are they going after?
Well, because if you have that on the warrant, it tells me that if you find that in your search, that you're going to move on that. If you're looking for something related to obstruction, then you're willing to move on it. That means you're willing to indict based on that.
Oh, it means you may be willing to indict.
Well, if you find something, if you find evidence of law-breaking, and you move on a warrant based on a law being broken, why would you not indict?
Because you didn't find the evidence to back up the
allegation. That's what I just said. If you found the evidence, moving on it.
Okay.
If you find something, if you put that in the warrant and you find something,
right, if you find
then that it, means right. you're willing to move on it.
Right. I thought you were saying the warrant itself meant you were willing to move
no,
on it.
No, if you
right.
find the evidence that
find
you
evidence,
that
right.
you say you're looking for, then yeah. where is that obstruction? Based on what?
Well, again, if the obstruction of justice is based on the Presidential Review Act, that's a civil violation.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a huge stretch on a civil violation with the debate going on between two parties as to what they perceive as classified or not, and a president who said, no, I let everybody know how I was going to disseminate and declassify, and I made it clear how I could do it, and I did it. Well, with that debate going on, to have the wide scope of the warrant that they have that covered everything during his administration, I would believe that a special master, unless there's another crime that nobody is talking about. Because right now it's about the Presidential Records Act. I don't know what the obstruction of justice for what. Are they saying obstruction of, and it was interesting, some of the legal stuff. Well, Trump's lawyer said that they told the Department of Justice there was nothing more classified, and they believe there was, and so that is the obstruction of justice. On a civil case, on a civil charge, obstruction of justice to get a warrant that is that wide,
none of that makes sense. Because that's it. If there were some other crime, then we would have heard that by now. So this is about Presidential Records Act, or it's a fishing expedition based on January 6th.
And
imagine coming out and then you're claiming it's all about the records, and then you find something on January 6th, and then they move on something on January 6th. Well, first of all, tell me what that would be.
I wonder if Trump will go to a federal, whether they'll do it today, go to a federal judge to appoint a master.
I'm guessing, yeah, they're working hard on that.
Or it would be done this week. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yep.
If that happened.
Right. I mean, you're certainly not going to give up the fight. The Department of Justice doesn't want that, but it doesn't mean you don't fight for it. Because right now, in the court of public opinion, he has the advantage.
Well, if you know you're innocent, you do it.
Yep.
If you know you're guilty of something, you do it,
mm-hmm.
because it stops the DOJ from using any evidence until the special master allows it to be used.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, you would use it.
Yeah, sure.
You would want to use it and get a federal judge to say, nope, let's put a stop on it. And I don't know. I just think if this thing went, this thing ever gets to court, even preliminary, the judge is going to be looking at that warrant. If they take anything that they found in this and use it in, that would be the interesting thing, too. Here's a question I have, and I don't know how this works. If the special master comes out and says the Department of Justice cannot use any of these things, and some of those things was evidence that showed that, Trump committed some act for January 6th,
mm-hmm.
okay, hypothetically. Does that mean if the special master comes in and says, sorry, nope, you can't use that can't be used at all against Trump? Even under a separate mm-hmm. warrant later on for a different crime?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because if they generically don't use it, sorry, you can't use any of this stuff. Is that the same as if they used it and then went to court with it And then the judge says in the preliminary, sorry, you can't use, before they actually get to the trial, you can't use any of that information because that warrant was bogus. At that point, they can't use it. But can they use it if they generically say all of this stuff can't be, you can only, the classified stuff you got, but anything else that didn't relate to the classified stuff that you were concerned with in the affidavit.
Yeah, I don't know.
That'd be interesting, though. But it does, either way, it puts a stall on. If you go to a federal judge to get it, because I wonder if a federal judge at that point say, look, I'm going to appoint a master, and everything's on hold on that. You can't use anything until we tell you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would make that move. Because anything you're claiming on attorney-client privilege, again, it falls under that. If it falls under that privilege, a judge is going to come out, you know, quite possibly and say, all right, these documents have to be returned to the president.
And why doesn't the Department of Justice, according to Turley, want a special master? Trump can use that.
Well, that's the other side of it, is that you spelled out why you would want it in either case, if you're guilty or not. If you're Trump, well, if you are the DOJ, why would you not want it?
It gives you credibility.
What gives you credibility?
The special master.
Yeah, right. No,
if the special master rules in your way, it gives you more political credibility.
Exactly. So why would you not want it?
And probably legal credibility, too, to use that in the future. Exactly. Why would
if you're so sure on this, this is every, look, going back to the beginning, if you're so certain on something to the extent that you're willing to execute the warrant a week ago, then you're willing to answer questions about the warrant itself and the execution of the warrant immediately, and you're okay with a special master being assigned because you know you've done nothing wrong. Everything was done by the book. Unless it's a fishing expedition.
Which we've always suspected it was.
And if it's a fishing expedition and you're afraid of the entire process of this happening, of how it went down, being shot down by a special master, that's why you object to it, which is what they have done. If you're certain of it, then you, sure, we're absolutely open to that. We have no problem. And sure, you step up Monday evening last week and you answer questions to the media about the warrant itself and how it went down. And you know you don't, you already know, and everybody knows, you're not going to talk about classified documents. But Thursday, he ordered the court to release the information about the warrant. And if you did it a few days later, why wouldn't you do it the night of? Why wouldn't you talk to the media the night of?
Well, you'd have to get Trump's approval to do it.
But they could talk about the process of the warrant and how they executed the warrant, and they didn't do that.
Oh, yeah, they could have put out a statement before they released the actual warrant. They could have always done that.
If you were willing to go as far as you did on Thursday, then why weren't you willing to talk to the media on Monday night?
Yeah. With at least a statement.
Yeah. And
his statement on Thursday was bad. It wasn't a good statement.
Well, and the fact that it fell on Thursday, it was horrible. It fell short. It didn't explain anything.
Very hesitant.
Very
defensive.
It seemed like he was scrambling.
Yeah.
He was desperate to do something in that moment.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. This is interesting. What is now an extremist symbol? Atlantic contributor Daniel Panettin declared that the Catholic rosary has become a symbol of religious radicalism.
Wow, really?
The rosary is a string of beads or knots used by Catholics as they pray a sequence of prayers. But one writer warned that they have taken on a far darker meaning in modern times. Just as the AR-15 rifle has become a sacred object for Christian nationalists in general, the rosary has required a militaristic meaning for radical traditional or rad-trad Catholics.
Rad-trad. Wow.
Panatin claimed in a Sunday piece how the rosary became an extremist symbol. On this extremist fringe, rosary beads have been woven into the conspiratorial politics and absolute gun culture.
Huh?
I have no idea what is... As a Catholic and gun enthusiast, I have no idea what he's talking about.
I haven't seen that anywhere. I haven't seen that anywhere. Wow. Panatin, I guess when you're desperate, I guess you just write this garbage in the Atlantic.
Panatin slammed the entire online ecosystem for disseminating imagery featuring Christian warriors, both historical and modern, suggesting that social media pages are saturated with images of rosaries draped over firearms.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that. Maybe I missed something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's time to come up with, I don't know, rosary gun privilege or something. I don't know.
I guess.
Rosary privilege.
Well, and, you know, soon enough, get rid of the Pope. Let's not have that position at all in the church, right? We shouldn't have any, because if you're going to get rid of the Supreme Court, if you're going to
get rid of the Pope,
the Senate, okay. You got to, then just move on. Keep moving.
I wasn't sure where you were going at
first.
Just now
get rid
I fully
of the
understand.
Pope and you know.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.